Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg, and thank you for coming and listening to Yoga Birth Babies. I am so excited to be talking to Penny Simkin today. For those of you that don't know her in the birth world, you must be living under a rock because she's amazing. So let me tell you a little bit about her before we start our conversation today. So Penny Simkin is a physical therapist, a childbirth educator, doula, and birth counselor. She is nationally recognized as a premier authority on childbirth, having helped over 14,000 expecting women and birth partners in childbirth, and attended hundreds of couples through the birth process. Penny is a prolific author and serves on more than 10 different consultant and editorial boards, including the journal Birth, Issues in Perinatal Care, the International Childbirth Education Association, and the Seattle Midwifery School, where she also provides training for doulas and lectures for students. She's written a myriad of books, journals, and magazine articles. She's also co-founder of Dona International, formerly Doulas of North America, and Prevention and Treatment of Traumatic Childbirth. The Simkin Center for Allied Birth Vocations is named in her honor. In addition to providing childbirth education, birth counseling, and labor support, Penny travels extensively throughout the country, lecturing and presenting at conferences as workshops. Penny is married to Peter, and they have 4 grown children, 8 grandchildren, and 2 grandchildren-in-law, and also a sweet pug named Lola. Wow, you're a busy lady. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. It is really such an honor because I've read your books, your articles. You're kind of like the John Lennon to me of of the birth workers. And to have the opportunity to speak with you and to share your wisdom with my community, it's truly touching and honoring, and it's just so great to talk to you. So I thought we would talk about one of the topics you're quite versed on, pain, suffering, and trauma in labor. Is there anything you want to jump in before I start with my questions?
Well, I just thank you for that nice introduction and hope I can live up to your hype there.
I think you can. So, if we can jump right into discussing the difference between pain and suffering.
Yeah, it's a very important distinction. And, you know, I think if we went to an ordinary dictionary, we would look up pain and a synonym would be suffering. And if we look up suffering, a synonym would be pain. But there's more to it than that. And in the psychology literature, they've made quite a differentiation. And it's very important to us in the birth world to distinguish those. So pain is basically, it's an unpleasant or very unpleasant sensory or emotional experience that is associated with tissue damage, either actual tissue damage or potential. So it's physical. That's the most important part of it. And our understanding of what makes pain manageable for some people and not for others is a huge topic. Then when we look at suffering, suffering is an emotional reaction, and it includes any of these things, like a perceived threat to her body, feeling of that her body is going to be harmed, helplessness, loss of control, distress, an inability to cope with the situation, the distressing situation, and could be that a fear of death of the mother herself or her baby would be a part of it. So these are all emotional responses. Now, it's really important that we, I'll say this, that suffering by this definition is very much like the definition of trauma, mm-hmm. which we'll be talking about. But what I'd like people to understand, and I'm sure as soon as I say it, they're going to, is that we can suffer without having any pain at all.
Right.
For example, grief, being jilted by a lover, having lots of feelings of foreboding or that have nothing to do with physical pain. So we can have suffering, but we can also have pain without suffering. And that's the place where I think it's very important in childbirth to recognize the difference, that some people can have considerable pain, but they're not suffering. They don't worry about it. They accept it. They work with it. And they're not distressed by it. And for others, it's just the opposite. The pain is a trigger of many emotional concerns as well. So those are that's how I would define the differences.
I think that's important to know, because I think people often think of childbirth and they don't see that they can be separated. You can have pain without suffering and suffering without pain. So, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, when they think about birth trauma, they'll think injury to the baby. But I know a lot of us are in the birth world are starting to talk about birth trauma as it relates to the mom. Can you describe your definition of birth trauma and what can lead to a woman experiencing birth trauma?
Well, of course, the physical trauma could be a part of it. Damage to the vaginal outlet, for example, mm-hmm. or excessive bleeding during birth. I mean, some of the things that we know can happen would certainly qualify as physical trauma. But more common probably in most industrialized countries where the birth process is quite a safe one in terms of damage, is emotional distress and trauma. And this being treated badly, disrespectfully or unkindly, being forced or pushed into accepting treatments or care practices that the person does not want. Some women bring a fair amount of previous trauma into their births. Many have had abusive situations in their past, sexual abuse, experiences with hospitals that have been less than ideal. And so there may be a bit of a fertile field for trauma. It might be easier for some people to be re-traumatized if they've experienced trauma that never was resolved. So we have to be very concerned about the emotional responses of the woman, the mother, and her partner as they go through the labor process.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, there seems to be more understanding and support being offered to those who suffer from postpartum depression or post-traumatic stress disorder. But I think a majority of the people don't see a connection between the birth experience and the aftermath. Can you continue to expand on that?
Well, I hope so. there is quite a distinction between postpartum depression and other postpartum mood disorders like anxiety, and mm-hmm. there are many others, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And unfortunately, it hasn't been until very recently, really relatively recently, that we've even recognized PTSD after childbirth mm-hmm. as a reality. And so when women have been distressed or unhappy after childbirth, they're treated as if they have depression. And many of the treatments for postpartum depression just worsen the PTSD, if that's what it really is. So it's important to be, for someone who's knowledgeable, to be able to recognize that what this woman is truly suffering from. Now, what was another part of your question? I forgot.
The connection between the birth experience and the aftermath. But I do want to ask a quick question what you just said about the postpartum depression treatment and that of post-traumatic stress disorder. That seems interesting to me that they'd be two different things. What would the difference be?
Well, for example, a person who is depressed is often, for some of her healing, she's kind of put on a regime, you must get out every day. You must seek out companionship, get exercise, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And for the woman who has PTSD, she may have being with other people may actually trigger her. You know, if people know that she had a hard time with her birth, that she maybe had a cesarean that was an emergency, and she was terrified, and people know that. And if she tries to talk to them about it, they may react by saying, "Oh, look, you've got a healthy baby. You know, why are you worrying about this? You shouldn't be thinking about that part of it. Think about how lucky you are." And can you see how that alienates her further from all these people, mm-hmm. and I think deepens her feelings of PTSD.
Yeah, so it's one of the things I hear a lot from my students is they'll kind of shrug their shoulders and look really kind of beaten up and be like, well, I have a happy baby. And then their feelings, I guess, I feel like they're being invalidated from their community. Like, it's all about the baby when it's not. You know, so that really does happen mm-hmm. so much.
Oh, it happens a lot. It happens by you know, her best friends, her family, mm-hmm. her parents, her caregiver. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, many women will go through and no one will validate the fact that how this baby was born was very traumatic for her mm-hmm. and, you know, give her some TLC for that.
Yeah, that's the disconnect I see, that the birth experience, a lot of people don't think, okay, the birth experience happened and now the mom has post-traumatic stress disorder, and the connection that they don't see the birth experience has an aftermath.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I can add to that if we
yes.
have time.
Yes, but, absolutely.
For some women, let's say they've had a very traumatic birth. Maybe they were treated disrespectfully. Maybe someone criticized you're breathing too fast, or if you make that much noise, you're going to bother the whole floor. You know, very thoughtless, cruel comments and that hurt her and make her think I'm doing this wrong. Everything I do is bad. And so she comes out and her baby is healthy and whole. And she really pulls herself together and puts everything into the care of this baby. And so her feelings of trauma get pushed to the back. She doesn't acknowledge them. She doesn't let herself feel them. And then after a couple of months, or maybe even further down the line, those feelings start to emerge. And she starts remembering. And even late, you know, later, maybe a few months later, she starts having flashbacks to the horrible treatment or the memories that she had at the time. And so we call that delayed onset of PTSD. But sometimes the positives of having that baby postpone mm-hmm. her recognition of the trauma.
Can it even be where she doesn't realize it until she's pregnant again?
Yes. And, you know, I see this all the time. I hate to say it. I do some counseling, and I have to emphasize this lowercase c. It is not capital C counseling. but I'm a pretty good listener. And for many people that don't have severe post-traumatic stress disorder, I think I can be quite helpful. But it is interesting that some people, well, I'm going to tell you an example. This is yes. a woman I worked with who, she had been in my childbirth class, and she, with her first baby, she was a La Leche League leader, and very, very into mothering, et cetera. With her first baby, it was a very difficult birth. And they did a forceps attempt, and it didn't work, so they did a cesarean. And the baby fussed constantly afterwards, and she was having difficulty breastfeeding. And as a La Leche League leader, this was even harder for her than it might have been for another person. Well, finally, when the baby was 4 months old, they diagnosed that he had a fractured skull from the forceps delivery.
Oh, yeah.
And so she kind of dealt with that, and I told her at that time, because I was kind of following her, she thought she was over it, quote, and I said, you know, if you ever want to talk about this some more, I'm always interested. And, you know, 5.5 years later, she called me because she was pregnant again. And she realized these feelings are coming up again. I'm dreading the birth. And she had to deal with it and come up with some ways to make sure the same thing would not happen again. Mm-hmm. And so we strategized that. And the strategy that we came up with was no instrumental delivery, and a cesarean would be better than, you know, than pushing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
She put some limits around it. And as it turned out, her pelvis was quite small at the outlet. And so a very similar kind of labor pattern. I was with her this time, and a similar labor pattern. And the doctor kind of forgot the plan and said, I think we can get out the vacuum and we can get this baby. And the woman said, absolutely not. And I encouraged her. I couldn't say it myself. But I said, remember our plan. And she did, and the doctor then remembered, and she went straight for the cesarean. And for her, it was the absolute best thing to do. She could not relive that horror again.
You know, I had a similar, my first birth was very long, and the postpartum of healing from such long pushing with my pelvic floor was really hard and a lot of PT. And when I got pregnant with my second, I had to really sit with my midwife and talk about, like, I can't do that again. What is the plan? And we came up with something similar about what I could tolerate and what would be best for me and my body. So I can relate to the woman's strategy and the need for something different.
Yeah.
She's certainly lucky that, she had you.
That's a very big thing. I want it to be different from last time.
Yeah.
And it usually is. So there's good news there.
Yes, that's true. How common is post-traumatic stress disorder in new moms?
Well, you know, we don't have, you know, national figures for all 4 million people that give birth, how many have PTSD. But there have been several surveys and reports, and this is a worldwide problem. The industrialized world has reported this many times, and we find that between about 1 in 4 and 1 in 3 women report that their births were traumatic. And this is, I mean, think about that.
That's huge.
We have 4 million births a year in the United States, and 1 million, if it's 1 in 4, 1 million people would have births that they perceive as traumatic. And it's their perception that is the reality.
Right.
It isn't what the doctor thought or what her mother thought. It's what she feels. So about, you know, let's say 1 in 4 to be on the conservative side. But then a portion of them will go on and develop the full-blown post-traumatic stress disorder, all the symptoms, where most of them won't. About 3 out of 4 of those will have what is called post-traumatic stress symptoms, but not the whole disorder, anyway. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the word is I'm groping for. But with that high an incidence, you know, that's higher than most other disorders, that psychological or physical, that happen after birth, and yet we've kind of swept it under the rug and we're not aware of it. So this is an area, and I'm really glad you're doing this podcast, because we need to get the word out.
Yes.
You know, on this, because there's so much hope.
Yeah, I read a study, it was part of an article, about that some women can experience post-traumatic stress disorder to the same level as people that were down at the World Trade Center during 9/11. Like, it was that traumatic of an experience at birth. Was that traumatic?
Yes.
It seems insane, I guess is the word, that a terrorist attack could equate birth. It makes me sad that that's what women are experiencing, and I'm hoping we can help women. We'll get to some of those questions later about how we can support women to not have a traumatic birth.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. I did want to say one good thing, and you know, the other analogy there is that these women, this is the same thing that our soldiers are coming back from the Middle East with, mm-hmm. you know, is PTSD. And we have some 35,000, or that's off the top of my head, but a large number of veterans with PTSD. But compare that to around 350,000 women a year who get full-blown post-traumatic stress disorder after childbirth. But the good news there is that the treatments for PTSD that are being developed for our veterans work with the women who have had traumatic births as well.
So do you think these symptoms are being more recognized then, because the veterans are coming back with that people are like, oh, I see the similarity?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I hate to say that there's anything coming good, you know, any good coming out of those wars, but if it's giving the veterans some fair treatment and that's spreading to others that have PTSD.
How can a woman or her family recognize if she's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder as opposed to just the baby blues or just the common feelings of being overwhelmed by new parenthood?
Well, that's a good question, and she may need some help with that. But generally speaking, the baby blues are temporary. They last, you know, about a week, and then her mood lifts, and often that's tied in with some of the hormonal adjustments very early after birth, I think, and just the fact that she's kind of sleep deprived, and then when things start to get a little bit organized, usually people pass through that the blues. So, but whether or not this is a persistent problem, I think you're right that in this country, everyone's heard postpartum is hard. Mm-hmm. And so here it is hard. She is having nightmares and flashbacks. And she said, I didn't think it would be this hard. But she thinks this is what everybody's talking about. So she needs to know. And I think we could go over some of the symptoms that a woman might have.
Let's do that.
That would kind of tell her this is a lot more than something to just wait through. And but part of it would be how she looks back on the birth. You know, if she is feeling that she got really rotten support or care, if there's anger and blame there, and she's very likely correct, but she might perceive it that way when others don't as well. She may feel that it was all chaos. Looking back, I can't figure it out. She may be someone who finds that she's feeling like more like a babysitter than a mother. And I've had many people say, I was just going through the motions. I did everything I was supposed to do. I changed him. I fed him. I rocked him to sleep. But I didn't have any feelings toward him that were loving and, you know, giving. And that's very troubling to many women to feel that way. I've got stories rushing in my head, but I don't know why I should be telling them. A sense of that... of isolation, my friends don't understand, you know, what we've already been talking about. But then things like nightmares, flashbacks. A flashback is like an awake nightmare, you know. But she might be washing the dishes or something. And all of a sudden, she's feeling like she's in that same place. Things that trigger her easily. Some people can't drive by the hospital where they had the baby. They just have a panic attack, uh-huh. You know, just the reminder of it. So they go blocks out of their way. So a lot of anxiety. And, you know, I think that there is an assessment tool called the Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Scale, and it's to measure depression. But it has been adapted for something that could be done for a person, a self-help device or self-assessment, where it's just 10 statements, and she sort of thinks, for the past week, I've been happy and able to see the bright side of things, you know, yes, all the time, all the way to not at all, and I've been panicked for no good reason, or I can't sleep, I've been crying, I'm so unhappy, you know, there's 10 statements. And sometimes, and I have my students in my childbirth class use this, my doula clients, I give it to the doulas when I'm training doulas, as a way to just have the woman think about these statements and realize, my gosh, I'm not myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not myself. I hadn't really put it together that way. And that's enough. And see, as a doula, the doula might be able to say, well, you know, you're not yourself, and maybe it's time to seek some help for this. The partner the same. Sometimes the partner is traumatized, and the partner goes through this and said, my gosh, I'm not myself. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, my dog.
Oh, that's a little pug. Hi. No worries.
You want to, I think I can get rid of her if you give me a minute.
Sure.
Oh, Katie's going to take her. Yeah. Thank you. So that's a portion you'll edit out, right?
I'll edit that out. Don't worry.
I can't remember what I was saying.
So you're talking about also the questions that she can ask herself, and the doula could recognize it, and the partner can recognize he or she's not themselves either.
Right. And you know, the motto that we have, this is one of my mottos, she has very good reason for feeling this way, behaving this way, believing these things, saying these things. And so we take her at face value. If she's unhappy, there's a good reason for it. It isn't that she's just spoiled or that she's expecting too much or, you know, things like that. And so we take it from there. And then if there are understanding, kind people in her world that will accept at face value, this friend of mine or this dear daughter of mine is not herself right now, and I'm not going to abandon her, and I'm not going to be telling her to buck up and, you know, get over it. I'm going to love her through this. And then the idea would be she probably needs some professional help, mm-hmm. of some kind. Sometimes there are groups of mothers that get together and they find they're not alone. But often it is a private one-on-one thing that can help.
Yeah, no, we do at my yoga studio, we do new mom support groups. But I think for what you're talking about, maybe even, the one-on-one. But I also feel like sometimes the moms want to put on such a front that, because I've talked to so many of my students, and please, if you have stories, please jump in with stories. I think that's great for people's minds. But I've had many students just say after, it's just breaking down, like, they didn't know how hard it'd be. They thought it was just them. They think they should be able to, so they're telling themselves, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. And I don't think they're just trying to put on such a face that others may not necessarily see how much they're suffering, or they don't realize this is out of the ordinary. Like, I had one mom years ago. She was a single mom by choice, and her baby was colicky, so not only was she doing this on her own, she had a colicky baby. She just one day broke down. She's just like, I just didn't know how hard this was going to be. Is it supposed to be this hard? And I said, your baby really is, your baby's more colicky than most. And she didn't realize that, crying all the time. So she really has had this breakdown, and she sought help, but she had a traumatic birth, she had a colicky baby, she was doing it on her own. So, but she was trying to put this face on to the outside world that everything was okay. So I think that's sometimes a problem too.
That is a problem. And we often expect that the pediatrician or the baby's doctor is in the best position to assess the mother. And often, there are lots of advice about, three questions to ask to figure out whether she's depressed or not. But the thing that we often don't realize is that when she's going to take her baby into the doctor, she puts on her makeup, she dresses up, nicely, and she can get through that hour-long period before she breaks down. And so the baby doctor, whoever, doesn't perceive, they think, gee, she's doing great. And so the opportunity to intervene or to at least make an assessment passes because she has pulled herself together. She doesn't want people to know that she's, quote, weak or unable to cope or whatever. So she puts on her best face. It doesn't last forever, but she can do it long enough to get through a meeting or something like that.
So how can we encourage women to take the face off and be seen?
Well, that's a, I think one of the things is education. If all they know is that it's a sign of weakness to be sad after the baby's born, or that you should be guilty about that, if that's all they know, then there's no hope. I mean, they're going to hide it and fight it as much as they can. But if they do take childbirth classes, or if they're in a yoga class where there's some time for discussion, sometimes just bringing up the fact that sometimes postpartum is a bitch. And someone else can initiate it, and to say that some people even have a mood disorder from it, and there's no disgrace in that. In fact, it's much more important to recognize if one has it, because there are lots of good things that can be done to hasten the recovery from it. So I think that knowing, and this is why, to be honest, in my classes, I spend a lot of time talking about unhappiness after childbirth is how I put it, because it can, I'm not going to try to make a diagnosis, whether it's depression or PTSD or anxiety or something else. But by going over this ahead of time, and I will be honest, I had a very severe postpartum mood disorder after one of my children was born, and I share that. And talked about how alone I was because, I'm an old lady and my babies are old. They are old now. And there was no, wait, people were arguing about whether postpartum depression even existed. But I was very alone, and it was a very serious thing. And I'm so fortunate that it lifted. It lifted for me after some months of suffering. But when I tell people that I've been through it and I know there's hope, and that if they need some help to call me, and I've actually developed relationships with some of our best therapists and psychiatrists in the area. And if I make the call, they will see that person, even if they're booked.
That's
They'll
great.
find a way to patch people together to get them some care right away. And I haven't had to use that very often, thankfully, because I'd probably get a reputation if I did. But I just want people to know that getting on it, acknowledging it, is the best way to start the healing process. And so I think that, anyone who's listening, who has an opportunity to be sort of an authority figure with a new mother, should see that as part of her responsibility, not to make a diagnosis, but just mm-hmm. to recognize this person is not the person I knew before she had this baby, and to help her to see that, and then help her to take some initiative to get some care.
Absolutely. Helping them find support, not diagnosing, and just taking the stigma away. And I remind moms, and I try not to scare them prenatally, but, you know, that it's a little rough. I remember my mom telling me, this was, you know, about like 100 years ago, about my brother. She didn't expect, he was colicky too. She just thought that she'd be, you know, putting a baby in a stroller and birds would be singing around her and it would be like lovely and happy. And she was so young then, and the other side of the challenge of motherhood. She didn't feel prepared. No one told her. And so we try in the studio to be honest about setting yourself up for support and that there are times that are really hard. You know, I use some of the coping skills that I used for labor postpartum, like reminders like this will pass, just breathe, you'll be okay. Like I call it doula-ing myself through postpartum. So I'm going to get back to some of my questions. So in one of your articles you wrote, in a study that I published years ago on the long-term impact of a woman's birth experience, I found that the most influential element in a woman's satisfaction, high or low, with their birth experience 15 to 20 years later is how they remember being cared for by their clinical care provider. Can you talk a little bit more about the long-term impacts on a mom or any of your other findings from the study?
Well, that study changed my life, I have to say.
Wow. I'm glad I picked that quote.
it was really just earth-shaking to me. Because I was thinking about leaving childbirth education. I'd been teaching for about 20 years at that time. And I was thinking, oh gosh, you know, I'm getting old. I should be teaching menopause education. And I also found that childbirth education was de-emphasizing childbirth and working more on parenting. It was like they'd given up on birth. And so thinking about leaving the field, I thought, well, I'm going to find out. I'm going to contact some of the women that I had in my first classes and see if they even remember the birth. It does, you know, is there any importance to it at all? And maybe I shouldn't be teaching. And I was able to locate, 24 women who had taken my classes in the first 5 years of my teaching career. That's between 1968 and 1973. And I had the birth stories they wrote right after their babies were born. And so I contacted them, and all the people I found said yes when I asked if they would participate in my study. And it had been 15 to 20 years since they'd had their babies, and they all said yes. So that tells you something right there.
Right.
And so then I asked them to write the story as they remember today, and also to describe how much satisfaction they felt. As they look back on the birth, how satisfied do you feel? You know, from the top, most satisfaction possible to not at all. Mm-hmm. And I compared, then they sent the story in, and I compared the first one that they had written right after their babies were born with this one that they had written years later. And they were so consistent. They remembered. They remembered. And they remembered details. They remembered what was said to them. And that really told me something. And then I found that they could quote, you know, what the nurses and doctors said. And so then when I asked them about the satisfaction, I got ratings from the top rating, which I had as number one, down to seven, which was very poor satisfaction. And in the themes that I went through, I forgot to tell you, I brought them in for an interview that was about an hour and a half long where we went over all this and got a lot of more personal stories and recollections. And I came up with these themes. But what I found was that the women who rated their satisfaction the highest possible they all had great positive memories of how they were cared for by the doctors and nurses. We had no midwives even practicing in those in those years. You know, it's ancient history. But they remembered one woman had a long, hard back labor, and she, you know, she was really tired, exhausted, finally got to pushing. Her nurse's shift ended, but the nurse decided to stay and saw her through the birth and then gave her a back rub afterwards. And this woman wept as she told me about that back rub, and she said, I don't think I'd ever had a back rub before. And she felt so loved and cared for, and the nurse had gone beyond, but she felt cherished. And And so this birth that most people say that was kind of a rotten birth, she gave it the highest rating because of the way she was cared for. And there were a lot of stories like that. Some kind word that was said, or one woman had really wanted a natural birth, as most of the people in my classes did back in those days. Mm-hmm. And her doctor had said, "You're an excellent candidate." And then it turned out that she had a malpositioned baby, and it went on and on. And she felt like a wimp, because she said she wanted a caudal. That was the precursor of the epidural. And she felt like she was letting the doctor down, because the doctor had said she was a great candidate for natural birth. And she was saying, "What have I done? You know, I'm terrible, I'm weak." And he held her hand and looked at her and said, "Birth is not supposed to be a nightmare." And she felt validated. And afterwards, you know, she appreciated that so much and realized, you know, that made it a great birth for her. Even though it wasn't as, you know, straightforward and the natural birth that she'd hoped for, it wasn't not having the natural birth. It was being cared for lovingly, respectfully. And then I'll give you one other example of a woman who felt horrible. In fact, this particular nurse, I think, took care of three of the people in my study. She worked in the same hospital, and some of the ways they described her, I could tell it was the same person. But she hated laboring women, I swear. But she would say things like, "Stop that breathing right now. I won't have it." And she would send the fathers out of the room and then leave them and not let them back in. And had, you know, really awful things to say. And the way these three women described her, I knew it was the same one. But they felt that they were inadequate. They felt that they had done a bad job in labor. They didn't like this particular nurse. They did blame her. But it also left them with a great feeling of dissatisfaction about the whole birth, even though some of them had a completely natural birth. But that didn't hold a candle to the way they were treated. And so, I really feel that the way and this is why I got started with doula work, because I realized we're not taking good enough care of women during labor. And if having someone there who has that as her sole responsibility, this does not in any way diminish the role of the partner. But the partner doesn't have the confidence in the birth process and the knowledge of what to do. I mean, we teach in class how to do things, but often they need some coaching and guidance in the labor. Mm-hmm. But to have that doula right there, even when bad things are happening, when a woman has to have a forceps delivery or something like that, the doula can hold her, can say, "Our job right now is this. This is all that matters right now." And keep the woman focused, keep her company, you know, and continue taking care of her emotionally during these difficult times.
Yeah, I remember reading one of your books, or maybe it was an article, and it really influenced me very early on how I practiced supporting women as a doula, was stepping back and just saying, how is she going to remember this? And then I would think, how can I help her have positive support, especially when the births kind of spiraled out? I remember this one birth where not only did I feel traumatized, I know the partner did and the woman did, and I tried as hard as I could to remind her of what she did well and how proud I was of, you know, she stayed connected to her body, and, you know, that's something that you said that really stuck with me, is how is she going to remember this and how can I add to a positive memory? Because I truly believe that what we experience as birthing moms, whether we realize it or not, we're going to pass that birth history down to our children. And then that's going to influence part of their perception of birth. And so they're going to be carrying that with them. So whether they even gave birth or not, if they heard positive stories from their parents, they're going to have a positive view. If they heard horrible stories from their parents, that's already going to influence it. So,
huge. And it was that study that led me to that. I call it the doula's motto. You know, how will she remember this?
Yeah.
And you know, we have to keep that in our minds all the time. How will she remember this? How will she remember that? And so when things are going south, we know she's going to remember this forever. Mm-hmm. And so we may be able to connect with her and say, this is a rough time right now. You're doing everything you can, and we must keep on with that, and I'm going to stay right here with you this whole time, or something like that. Or planting little seeds. We can't you know, after a birth that is very difficult, we can't say, that was great, you were great, you did such a great job. And the woman says, you don't get it, you know.
Yeah.
She may have suffered terribly, so we have to listen carefully. We have to let her talk about it, and you know, in negative terms. We even have to sometimes be, I hate to say it, but we might be seen as part of the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you leave at that time? You know, you shouldn't have left me at that time, or something like that, or
mm-hmm.
what you said was... So we just, I think if we have that in our minds all the time, that she's going to remember forever, and let's make it a good memory forever.
Absolutely. I remember, I'm going to switch a little bit to not just the mom, but also the doula and the partner, because I do remember a birth that really very quickly did spiral out of control. And the resident ended up performing an episiotomy on my client under the impression that the mom had an epidural, which she did not. So here she is cutting into perineum that has full sensation. So you can imagine the scream. And that experience, I know, left the mom and her husband and myself very traumatized. Can you talk a little bit about the birth trauma for the support team, the doula, and the partner?
When they're, we call that secondary traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
So someone who is trying to help someone or assisting someone who's having trauma, whether it's a birth or not, can often be traumatized with very similar symptoms as the person who actually experienced it. And, and you know, I thought you might want to talk about this, and I found a couple of quotes online that about partners that I think are we need to be a little more gracious toward partners, I think. But one man on a blog post that I saw said, "What about the person who's forced to watch, feeling powerless to help the ones he loves? In some ways, I wonder if being a captive bystander is more painful than experiencing the abuse." And I can picture the partner with her, you know, hearing her screaming. That's a terrible thing for him and for you, of course. Another guy said, you cope by breaking down in private. Because, you see, in the relationship between the two, if the partner's been traumatized, he can't burden his beloved with that and say, this was so hard for me. And, you know, he knows he can't do that. And so he holds it in and tries to be sympathetic to her, but all the time he's reliving it from his own point of view, which was horrible. And so, and, you know, this is kind of a grim podcast, isn't it, right now? I hope it's okay.
Yeah.
The father, the partner, the loved one needs a place to go where he or she can receive some solace and some healing. And this is one of the problems that has been seen, that because they are going through their own experiences, not in parallel, but, you know, differently, sometimes they, the woman may begin to blame the man, and the man may, or the partner may blame her. You know, you should have had that epidural when I wanted you to, you know, something like that.
Right.
So often the relationship is under terrific strain, and I think help is needed for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know this particular couple, they had a lot of work they had to do after, emotional for themselves, and then mm-hmm. had to come back together as a couple. What can women do to best help prepare for the birth, especially if she does have a history of trauma or abuse or just a lot of fear surrounding her childbirth?
Well, first of all, I think I'm a little depressed about the state of childbirth education right now, but I think in good childbirth education, there would be some discussion of fear of childbirth. We don't have to get into all the details, but for some, there's a lot of anxiety around some aspects of it. And, you know, sometimes when we talk, I teach perineal massage, for example, in my class. And I know that some people who have had sexual abuse are going to say, you got to be kidding. You know, I'm not doing that. And so I couch it. And, you know, if this just grosses you out or you don't want to do it, the baby's going to come out anyway. So I don't want you to feel you must, you know. But I do recommend it. And talking about a birth plan, if they know there are certain things they're afraid of, it would be helpful to put it in a birth plan, a little bit of a statement to the staff you know, I have had a horrible experience in the hospital in the past, or took us, we had three miscarriages before we had this baby, and I still worry about whether this baby's going to make it. Or I have had trauma, sexual trauma, and I can't stand vaginal exams. I hope you understand. You know, if they can put something like that, I don't say they must, but if they feel comfortable doing it, it will help the staff to understand them better. And I think to modify their care in a more positive way for that particular person. Mm-hmm. So that would be one thing. And then there are a few people around the country who do specialize in doulas and childbirth educators who do counseling, and I'll call it lowercase c because we don't want to be illegal about this.
Right.
But to offer some private time. Let's talk about it. Let's sit down and talk about it. And can we come up with any strategies? So if, for example, if she has had, maybe she had a prior loss, maybe her last baby was stillborn, and she is carrying that into this pregnancy, scared to death. And someone should be acknowledging that. And so if she can talk about the fears that she has, it would be easy to say, oh, that couldn't possibly happen again. Don't worry about it because it never happens twice. You know, that kind of false reassurance is not what she needs. She needs someone who says, well, I know this must be really hard for you. And it's hard to feel joy about the upcoming birth when you have the memory of that, and to normalize it and to reflect it. And then she feels heard, she feels understood, and she's more likely to be able to say, yeah, but I'm going to make this one different. This is different. This is my different baby. So I think having someone who accepts her feelings where she is as normal for the situation she's in and just listens and reflects, and then when she's ready, I wonder if we could have the doctor do an extra ultrasound if you're worrying about whether your baby's okay, or why don't we talk to the doctor, or you talk to the doctor about this and that, so that she feels that she has some justification mm-hmm. for feeling the feelings that she has as being maybe different from the birds flying around and chirping around your head when you have a new baby. That kind of thing. So I think all of us can be good listeners.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's actually something many people, myself included, need to continue to work on. Are there telltale signs that a woman has crossed over from pain and coping with labor contractions now and to the suffering during her birth?
Yeah, I think there are. And, I mean, I think we think of the obvious, the screaming, writhing, that kind of thing. But I have to speak from my personal experience. One of the things that I teach, and it's just almost the core of coping, is rhythm. Mm-hmm. And I learned this not from the books and not from any of the great childbirth educators. I learned it from the women that I was taking care of, supposedly being their care provider. They were teaching me more than I was teaching them. But I've discovered that when women are coping well, there is a rhythm to what they're doing. Their sounds, their movements, their breathing. They might be pounding their partner on the shoulder, but if they're doing it in rhythm, it's a sign that they're coping. If they lose their rhythm, this is a sign that she has crossed over. And she really, we don't just let it go. And we help her to come back. You know, we say, right now, I want you to stay with me. And I'm going to take charge for a few moments, get you back into that rhythm. And you see, if we've been there, we know her rhythm, we've been in her rhythm, we can give it back. But she may get to a point where fatigue, discouragement, just tilt her over. And so then she needs a lot of help to get back in balance on that. If she doesn't, it's going to be trauma.
Right.
It's going to be trauma. So that's one thing. And then also when we just see the situation, if we're in a hospital where it's all strangers, many of our population have never met the person who is taking care of them during labor, the nurse or the doctor. And if we can see that there's a lack of kindness or respect, we should know that this could be wounding the woman right now. You know, this could be taking her into trauma right now. And as a doula, being present, it's really hard. I'd like to take the guy in the corner and say, be nice to this woman. But, I can't. So we try to make up for it. We hold her. We say, don't listen to that. You know, we do this kind of thing to try to keep her in the present and to hold on to her self-respect and her self-esteem during this difficult time. But we can usually tell that she's crossed a line. Susan Ayres is one of the great British people in this field of birth trauma, and she uses the term mental defeat. And I didn't know what that meant when I read about it, but I now know that when a woman has been trying and trying and trying, and she's not getting, you know, no progress, and she keeps doing what isn't working, I'm walking, I'm breathing, I'm trying this, I'm trying that, and people are giving her IVs with Pitocin, and then she needs her bag of water's broken, then she has an epidural, and then she's supposed to push her baby out with the epidural, and she just can't. And this breaks my heart. I haven't seen it very often, but I remember one woman who said, "I'm done. Just cut it out of me." And I can get tears when I think of that moment when she just thought, "It's hopeless. There's nothing I can do." And that woman, she is in the midst of deep trauma right then. And she's going to have to pay for it. She's going to be paying the price. And sometimes there's nothing we can do. The one woman, though, that does come to mind, and I've made a film about her. I call the film From Trauma to Triumph. But I was with her during labor, and she did this. She had been so well prepared and so highly motivated, and one thing after another was thrown up as a barrier, and she finally did say exactly what I said, "Just cut it out of me." Mm-hmm. And I had known her well because I'd been working with her, and I just thought, we can't have this. And I kind of pleaded with her, and I call her Jane. I said, "Jane, we need you." And I said it in this kind of desperate tone. And you know what? She pulled herself together. And she told me later, I thought, well, Penny's been here all this time. My husband's been with me for 2 days. And I can't let them down. And somewhere in her, she found it to give a couple of good gut-busting pushes. Got that baby out with a hand up by her face and 9 pounds and all this stuff. But that moment was a desperate moment for me. But I think it made this a triumph and not a traumatic birth. I wish I could say that I could do that with everybody, but mental defeat is a symptom. When she just gives up right to her core, we know we're going to have to be picking up the pieces later.
Oh, well, that's so helpful for, I think, birth support, whether it be a doula or the partner or the care provider, just to see that and then realize that, okay, we're going to help her after or during, just to have that sense. I like what you said about the losing the rhythm. That's very obvious and easy to see.
Yeah, it's a warning sign.
Yeah, it's a great warning sign. Just a little bit more time, and then I have to jump off to go pick my son up at camp. But can you, life of a busy mom, if you can just give some idea of how, if a mom did suffer, whether it was like deep traumatic or just feeling shamed or whatever it was, if she did suffer and there is kind of that residue on her after, what can you advise for her to do to help see the other side and to help move through her motherhood?
Well, I'll try to be this very, very quick on this, but number one, accept her interpretation as the real one. So we don't, you know, when she said, "I couldn't do it," you don't say, "Well, you did it." You know, you don't deny her reality. You felt like you couldn't do it. So I have people sometimes write the story, and with, you know, any anger, anything, just write it in there. Or paint it. I've had a lot of people that have painted their traumatic births, people that don't paint, and they love it. I've been amazed. Writing a letter to the staff, and the first version is one where you let it all hang out and you tell them how much you hate them, you swear, you cry, you don't finish your sentences, you spell everything wrong, and then maybe it can be crafted into something that would actually do some good, helping the staff understand that their behavior, you know, made you feel this way. So constructive steps that will justify her own experience as being real and valuable, validated. That's the word I'm trying to get to. And then to at some point, how do you wish it had gone? Could you paint how you wished it had gone? Or can you write how you did? Or can we talk about it? And sometimes just, you know, kind of looking at it very, very closely, she can see where things start to go south. She can see where some of the things that she did were not what she did. It was what other people did, and that demoralized her. And sometimes it gives her a better picture. If she continues to have symptoms, it would be a good idea for her to see a trauma therapist. We don't just go to any old therapist, but someone who specializes in trauma is the person she ought to see.
Okay, these are great. These are really great tips and important tips so that, again, the woman doesn't feel by herself and that she knows she right. can get through this patch of her life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start to wrap things up, but I want people to know where they can find you and your information, because you've got so much of it. So where's the best way for someone to, what's the best way for someone to find you?
Well, my website would be the best, and it's pennysimkin.com. They could write it in info@pennysimkin.com if they wish. I also have a Facebook page. I don't even know quite what it is, but I'm not really on Facebook, but I have a Facebook page that okay. has a lot of friends, and I put stuff out there from
Wonderful.
Time to time.
And of course, all your books, which I encourage any mom and partner, especially the partner book, the birth partner book, moms, partners, read Penny's stuff. Doulas, every conference if she's in that you can get to, go there.
Thank speak. You.
Oh, absolutely. I really take your word for it with so much weight, because you've been doing this for so long and you have such reverence for birth and supporting women. That it was, you know, I want women to hear this. So I wanted to thank you so much for giving me this time and for sharing your knowledge and just, you know, giving what you do to the birth community.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Oh, Penny, I'll let you know this comes out. And for those that are listening, thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you don't mind heading over to iTunes or Stitcher and rating and reviewing us, I'd appreciate that. All right. Well, everyone, I'm signing off. I'm going to go run down the street and grab my son from camp. Hope everyone has a great day. All right. Thanks, Penny.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Deb.
Bye.
Hang up.
Yeah. Bye.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.